First, I'd like to thank EDF for inviting me to come. It's good to be back in Austin. I spent a summer here in 91 at the University of Texas at Austin, so I believe that that officially makes me a Texas X. I hear that you'll just have to take one class and that qualifies you. So I have to pick up my sweatshirt on my way out of town. One other thing, I was just reading over my bio. It's not a game to try and guess the last digit of my telephone number. If you look on it and you wanted to call me, the last digit is 3. It's missing from the end of my bio. But at any rate, I asked one of my staff to put together a presentation, and they said, well, you're not doing it on California. I said, no, this should be more of a global view. And so this is the picture that came up, and it really started to make me think about, you know, Texas and California are joined in water resources in ways that we don't always like, and that is through our neighbor to the south, because we hold hostage to some of their supplies on the Colorado River, and it's my understanding that they hold hostage to some of your supplies on the Rio Grande. So there are reasons for us to be together and talk about water efficiency for a number of reasons, not just to share how to get these things to work. But I'm here really today to talk about a regional model that we've enacted in Southern California. And I'll give you a little bit of background. Some of the ideas that I'm going to talk about, I think, are applicable in your areas, and some of them you're going to see might be slightly different, but I don't know your water circumstances well enough to know whether or not they do or don't, so we're just going to go ahead and run through some of them. Other button. There we go. Little background on the Metropolitan Water District. We're that little yellow spot down there in the bottom. It's 5,200 square mile service territory. It serves portions of 6 counties, and I'll run through some of the ones you'll know: San Diego, Los Angeles, Orange County. Some of them you might not know as well: Riverside County, San Bernardino County, unless you're familiar with the old song Route 66, and then the southern reaches of Ventura County. It's 18.5+ million people, and I say plus because we have a number of folks that don't really get recorded in official census processes. We're growing at about 220,000 people per year. The region is the economy. There was a brief time during the dot-com bubble when we were not half the state's economy. Now we're over half the state's economy again. Film industry, obviously, is very large. Aerospace, although greatly declined from its heyday, is still quite strong. Also, telecommunications, and up until recently, the heart of a lot of mortgage financing in the country was coming out of this region as well. And we supply, this says 50 plus, based on some recent court decisions and some environmental water that has to be left in the Owens and Mono County, Inyo and Mono County. The Los Angeles Department of Water and Power is buying more water from Metropolitan, and therefore our numbers are closer to 60% of the water used in this territory. I don't have a blow-up of this area, but let me just give you a little bit of background as to how this is made up. The Metropolitan Water District is a public entity incorporated under a special act that was created specifically for us in the 1920s. There were 13 cities that banded together to help build the Colorado River Aqueduct to bring water in. We were the lowest priority in California to get water off the Colorado River, but the city of Los Angeles got tired of annexing all the lands around it and decided that unless you wanted to, you know, what's now Pasadena, Burbank, Santa Monica, all to be incorporated into the city of Los Angeles, they figured that it was more important that the region have a supply. So 13 cities banded together and help form the Metropolitan Water District. We're now at 26 member agencies. Many of them are wholesalers themselves, and there's even wholesalers beneath that. At the retail level, we represent over 300 retail entities within the service territory of 18.5 million people. Give you a quick overview of the way that we see our program and the way that we implement it. Essentially, we see three major areas. One is our research and development program. Another is direct incentives, and then how we deal with consumer behavior, which is code compliance, price response, and alike. And I'll go through each one of these. In our research and development program, this was an area that we weren't really doing a lot with. We very early on, we did a lot of the groundbreaking studies in the area of ultra-low flush toilets, and frankly, we lived on that for about 10 or 15 years in our program. The era of, despite what some folks are going to say, because saturation levels are uncertain in these devices, but the era of simply bolting porcelain to the floor and that's going to be your program into the future is over in California. We're reaching saturation levels such that we have to be looking towards something else to carry us forward. And a lot of that has to do in the area of landscape as well as in the area of commercial and industrial use. So we have a lot of programs we do between our enhanced conservation program and an innovative conservation program. We have grants totaling about $2 to $3 million a year that we give to our member agencies for the purposes of doing field research on new technologies and implementation approaches. We have some governing policies over that. We try to bring those programs in at about $300 an acre foot, but overall we look at more liberally at the water savings potential of those programs and try and identify ways in which those programs will yield benefits much longer term. We also, with our member agencies, sit down and every year we cull through all the research that we can find nationwide and find anything that has identifiable, statistically proven water savings. And we basically, if it's something, regardless of its broad application within our service territory, we add it to a menu of incentive programs that we have. So, for instance, recently we use, they're the non-water using pumps or dry pumps, and that we got some research actually out of Texas in that area. We had no experience with it whatsoever. We didn't know what the value of it would be in our service territory, but because it was a proven technology that saved water, we applied the value of the water that we had to that and issued an incentive. And we're finding people coming to us now for those incentives that we didn't even know were out there. And so to a large degree, because of the size of our service territory, we avoid the question of whether or not something is widely widely out there in the market or well understood on our end. In the public sector, we sometimes don't know everything that's going on in the private sector, and so we want to make sure that we're just doing the best we can to get water savings technologies out there. Let me just go to our incentive program. We basically have two sectors, a residential program and a commercial program. As of this summer, for the entire region, there will be a single 1-800 number for commercial and a single 1-800 number for residential for the entire 18.5 million people in Southern California. That took a little while for us to get going, but we were running a commercial program that had limited success, and through a USBR grant, we created a one-stop shop for the region. And the theory was that it doesn't matter if somebody owns a hotel chain, they don't care whether or not they're between three or four different water districts. If they decided that they want to change out all the toilets or pre-rinse spray valves or something else in the hotel, they want to come to a single shop. What we found over the past 5 years is that we've had sequential growth of 20% in that program every single year. And so we expect to see a tremendous growth in commercial savings. Water recycling is also part of what we incentivize. It's a very important part of what we do in Southern California, principally because where we import our water from in the north, there's an embedded amount of energy in our water that's somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 kilowatt hours per acre foot. We bring water into Southern California on the State Water Project over the Tehachapi Mountain Range. And as a result, even though we do energy recovery on the backside of that mountain, we have a huge energy costs of bringing that water into Southern California. And as a result, recycled water has a very favorable energy profile compared to bringing water in from exported sources, imported sources. One of the more controversial things that we actually have in our water efficiency program is our seawater desalination program. Again, though, the uniqueness of our location has the cost of seawater desalination within 10 or 15% of the energy cost of our marginal supplies for importing water. So although there are impacts of that as far as doing a one-for-one trade-off, seawater desalination seawater desalination is actually very comparable to other marginal supplies, and we are currently have contracts for 3 seawater desalination plants in Southern California, with 5 that we are committed to signing contracts for in total. That would produce about 150,000 acre feet per year in a region that uses about 4.2 to 4.5 million acre feet. So it's a very small portion of the portfolio. But going off script just a little bit, I think it's important for us to do at least one project just to show what its costs are, and how it can be done right and environmentally appropriately. But I think in the long term, it's not the panacea that Southern California once thought it was, that there would be this endless supply of seawater as a source of supply. The energy footprint of it and the cost of actually producing it are just tremendous. And also, on a large-scale basis, our system was built to move from the north and the east down to the south and the west. So in other words, all the capillaries, all the major arteries are to the north and the east, and all the capillaries are down by the coast. You can't reverse that system without destroying a lot of cities and repiping the entire infrastructure. And finally, we have quite a bit groundwater that's either had seawater infiltration or has been contaminated through long-term ranching and farming with nitrates and such, and we have some groundwater recovery programs that also fall into this. In the area of consumer behavior, we have a very aggressive program and legislation, and I'll go into some of that in just a moment. An advertising and outreach campaign, we've worked to brand the program, our outdoor program, as California friendly. I don't have the motif here, but it's a California poppy, and we certify products as California friendly. Right now, we are looking to EPA and their WaterSense label to we'll co-brand with them as things that are California friendly. But there are certain things that are going to be California specific that might not be EPA, and so we are still reserving that California friendly brand. We have inclining block rate structures, and we support inclining block rate structures with our member agencies. The California Urban Water Conservation Council, which is, I sit on the board of that, Marianne was our former executive director, actually has a best management practice that calls for water rates. No, you cannot have a declining block rate structure. You can have uniform block rate structures, not uniform rates. It encourages inclining block rate structures through many of the documents. But the key factor here is that a minimum portion of your revenue has to come from variable rates. So enough of the price signal actually ends up in the variable rate. Otherwise, you've diluted the impact. And the default factor that we have is 70%. 70% of your revenue has to come from variable rates. I want to go over a little bit of Metropolitan's policies that have led to success. First off, we incentivize based on avoided costs. That may or may not be a successful policy elsewhere, but because of the cost of importing water into Southern California, it's been very successful for us, and we commoditize it. It's basically roughly $200 an acre foot paid up front on devices that might take as long as 10 years to accrue benefits back. When you factor in the discounting, it's roughly equivalent to about $250 an acre foot on production of the water out of a conserving device. We use standardized water saving estimates. We work to get statewide estimates so that everybody has a common set of deemed water savings factors for all of the different products. So no matter what, I can go and talk to any other water agency in the state, and we'll be talking about basically using the same 31 gallons or 37 gallons per day for installing a ultra-low flush toilet. We charge a stewardship fee on every acre foot of water delivered through our system. This is how we fund our water conservation program, and it's based on the avoided infrastructure costs of our system. Most of that was water treatment and avoidance of water treatment expansion. For those of you in the water industry, know that we just went through disinfection byproducts rules changes, and that meant that a lot of what we were treating with chlorine and chloramination, we're now looking at UV and ozonation, and as a result, there's a complete different change out that had to happen. We had to refurbish or change out all of our treatment plants anyway, but now we still have the same avoided cost because now the energy costs on that treatment has gone up. UV treatment is much higher. Ozone generation is more energy intensive. And also the cost of energy has gone through the roof. And so we now have importation costs that are much higher. We implement through our member agencies and regionally. This is one of our policies. I personally believe strongly in regional approaches, but our member agencies like to also have the ability to implement their own. We use consistent messaging and branding, so we have a very tough media market in Los Angeles to go through, and so it's very important for us to have a consistent media message. That's not always difficult. It's sometimes referred to as herding cats, trying to work with our member agencies. Especially considering some of them are very progressive, and some of them, well, they're members of my board, so I won't go into, and I won't name names. And we have a very consistent record of supporting new plumbing code, and this is where I get into my flashlight analogy. Recently in California, there was a study that was conducted related to the Sacramento River Delta, where it looked at the goals that were set for water conservation in the state. And although we were measuring up okay on a total, what was very startling was that the active conservation, the conservation that was related to incentive-based programs, only amounted to about 10% of the overall savings that was occurring. And frankly, the environmental community at first was appalled at that result, that our incentive-based programs resulted in something so small. But I actually look at it completely the opposite. I think that the savings that comes from plumbing code and from ordinance and other legislation is much more valuable and much more important. And no matter how much money I have to spend on a water conservation program, it's never going to be enough to overwhelm those benefits that can accrue through that. So you have to think in a different paradigm as to where my money should go and what it should be used for. And I refer to it as the flashlight in the dark room. My money is like that flashlight. It's never going to be enough to illuminate the room. My job is to find the light switch in the room, whether it's a local ordinance, whether it's a piece of legislation, and my job is to shine that flashlight on the switch that I think is going to be most effective in illuminating the room and making sure that everybody in the room agrees that's the light switch we ought to throw. So that might mean getting customer acceptance by going out and doing all kinds of community activity. It might mean going out and working with manufacturers to get them to actually produce the high-efficiency toilets we need or the high-efficiency clothes washers that we need. But the fact is that I look at it as a 10-to-1 return if I can get that legislation passed, that ordinance passed, compared to the investments that I would have. So I think that that's pretty important. I want to just go over some of the factors that we can't claim as things that we've done to make things work, but actually have contributed in California to our success. We have a very strong process through the California Urban Water Conservation Council and the BMPs. We have regional sharing of resources in Southern California. That's an artifact of how we were created. So that means that if one agency conserves water, another agency has greater reliability, and that means that an agency is not going to resent paying money into the stewardship fund to fund conservation in somebody else's backyard, because overall, it's a share of the pain approach. Our geography and our costs. Obviously, we're importing water from so far away that the geography and the cost of our water mean that we're going to find conservation to be much more cost effective. The frequency of our shortage, much more frequent now. We're on 8 years plus on the Colorado of drought. You saw the bathtub ring earlier. Metropolitan's relative size in the state of California. Being half the state's population, half the state's economy, means an awful lot when we go to the legislature and say, this is where we need to go. It also sometimes plays against it if my board or somebody else within our service territory says, no, this isn't the way to go. But more times than not, it actually can move the needle on legislation. And then we also have a very progressive legislature and governor. The governor last month called that statewide he wanted to see a 20% reduction in per capita water use by the year 2020. And we're working on that metric to figure out how to make that work. Remaining issues, we still have regional inconsistency on messaging and program implementation. We're trying desperately to motivate other beneficiaries of water conservation. The energy sector in California is segmented and regulated under the Public Utilities Commission. They don't actually get to recognize the energy that's saved way upstate for conserving water down in Southern California, because there are two different energy utilities and there are two different jurisdictions. So we're working very closely with the California Energy Commission and the Public Utilities Commission to broaden the viewpoint of how you assess energy conservation when you conserve water. We are looking at goals that look beyond widget-based goals, which are where we are in the BMPs. You shall install toilets. You shall have pre-rinse spray valves. What we want is a better metric, and we're working very hard on trying to figure out how to make per capita work for everybody in the state. And we're also working very hard on the classification of recycled water, both in our community as conservation people to have it recognized as a water efficiency, but also through the regulatory process to make sure that it is not regulated as a waste, which is currently very stringently regulated in California as a waste and not a resource. So the solutions that we're pursuing, regional programs, regional messaging, partnerships with sanitation and energy folks. Sanitation's a real tough nut to crack because they don't recognize the avoided infrastructure investment that they just never had to deal with. We reduce their flows, and they come to us and say, you're causing higher levels of contaminants in the wastewater that we have to treat. So they look at it as an O&M increase and yet refuse to recognize the capital infrastructure reduction. And so we have to have a long-term process to figure out how to motivate that partnership. We're looking towards sound metrics and measurements, and of course we're looking for better regulation and 100% credit for recycled water. And what I mean by that is that we'd like our per capita to be judged based on per capita potable water use, not total water use. So with that, I'd be happy to hand it back.